Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Zeitgeist Tapes. My name's Emma Burnell. I'm a journalist, and we also have with us, as always, Professor Stephen Fielding. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Emma, and hello, listener, on this very warm day in Chorlton, South Manchester, which might explain any echo, because I'm talking to you from my kitchen with the door open into a garden which I think is currently nearly 30 degrees. So I
In
needed to cool down.
Manchester.
Yes, in my get off, right?
Yay! Well, I'm to speaking to you from my flat in East London, and I've just come in from the garden, which was a lot hotter than my flat. So I'm very lucky with my flat. And so this month we are looking at one of my all-time favorite films. It's not a film I came to because I knew anything about the topic. Or the what the film was going to be about. I saw a singular still of this film and I thought that is the prettiest boy I have ever seen in my life. And I was 13 and the boy was River Phoenix and the film is Running on Empty. And it is such a lovely film. If you ask me, Stephen may disagree. We shall see how he feels about it as we go on. Running on Empty is a 1988 Sidney Lumet film about two radicals who blew up a napalm lab during the Vietnam War and have since been on the run. So it is a it's set it's a contemporary film set in 1988, and it's about the lives that they've lived ever since and the lives of their. It particularly centered around the life of their older teenage son, the 17-year-old Danny, played by the aforementioned River Phoenix. And, they sort of chop and change. They have to change identities every few months. They move from school to school, place to place. And this has a particular impact on their two children. So they have Danny and Stephen, who is the younger brother, who's only 10. And then the parents are Arthur and Annie Pope, played by Judd Hirsch and Christine Larti. Stephen, what did you make of Running on Empty?
It was the loveliest film about terrorists on the run that I've ever seen. It was a lovely film, right? It was really well made. I mean, Sidney Lumet, I think we've talked about at least two of his other films. I mean, he made 12 Angry Men. I mean, that's got to be one of the best Hollywood post-war films ever made. Sort of a man of indisputable liberal in the American context, sort of opinion, who made amazing run of films, and it's very well made. It made me nearly cry twice.
Oh God, I was in a bit.
I went there, but I didn't quite. And I think it did it. I don't know if that said something about my mental state or the ability to manipulate me or the genuine emotion that was being expressed and talked about through the film. It was a lovely family film in a, but it was about terrorists. And
Yes.
I think one, well, not one reason, but the reason that we're talking about this, Emma, is ostensibly not because it's not just because it's one of your favorite films, but because it seemed apposite to talk about it, you thought, in relation to what was going on, and with the
In
Gaza,
the world.
but also Justice for Oil.
So, yes, basically, we d originally decided to look at this film several months ago in response to the campus protest that had sprung up around the Israel-Gaza conflict. And not the protests in themselves, some of which are perfectly lawful, but some of the outcry from those bits that haven't been lawful and the consequences thereof. Now, obviously, that period has passed, mainly because the students have gone home for the summer. But also, this in the last fortnight or so, there have been some quite long sentences handed down to Just Stop Oil protesters who whose protests were illegal. And I think what this film really explores is the decision to make making a decision to take an illegal action, and the fact that such a decision has consequences. And in the film, although they are running from the law, so they're running from that particular consequence, that does not mean that Annie and Arthur Pope are living a consequence-free life. And you know, we see very much that the life that they are forced to live by being on the run has in itself consequences for them and consequences for their families.
Yes, for the two, for the River Phoenix character in particular, and that becomes the dominant thing in it, doesn't it? But I mean, what I'm quite, there's a context for this film which maybe the listener isn't unduly aware of, but obviously as you say it's made, or it comes out in 1988. That's sort of 20 years or 15 years after the events, and the couple, the married couple, Artie and Annie, were students, anti-Vietnam students, as they're depicted, and it's during the course of that, the bombing, a lab which is making napalm, which is obviously doing immense harm to innocent Vietnamese, and they unknowingly they blind a janitor or someone who shouldn't have been there, someone who's really physically harmed, but they didn't mean to do it because as I explained, it was an act of conscience, but they do, and we didn't mean to harm anyone, right? Didn't mean to harm anyone. But in the United States at that very same time, and I'm not quite sure what their link is in the film actually meant to be with the Weathermen, or the Weather Underground as it became known, which came out of the late 60s radical movement, which had ostensibly been quite peaceful, but this became a kind of Marxist revolutionary terrorist organization, which went robbing and blowing things up and killing people. And so they're the loveliest, they're the cuddliest, they're the nicest possible terrorists you could possibly imagine. And and the film is very clear that, first of all, it was an accident. They didn't mean to blind the guy, which, I'm sure he's grateful for that, knowing that, if it was a real person. But there's a scene, isn't there, where they try to distinguish the lovely terrorist from the not very nice terrorist, who wants, because there's an organization which is kind of supporting them, isn't there? There's a network, is it called the Liberation Army?
Liberation Army, I believe, yeah.
Which is still ongoing, which is a kind of maybe a version of the Weather Underground. I don't know. But they've got a kind of sleazy kind of guy that turns up, someone that they used to know in the organization, with a gun and instructions to rob a bank. And they're very clear about that is not what they do. They don't do it, but then he goes off and, he gets killed, doesn't he, during the course
robbery. He gets killed, but he also puts them in danger, of exposure, because when he first reintroduces himself to Annie Pope, he does so at her workplace, and he at that workplace steals someone's credit card, which is what he uses to rent the car that he uses to rob the bank. So he is clearly there to play the kind of more fast and loose, more addicted to the action than the cause character. And he and Annie have a long kind of discussion and argument about, she says that, it all ended when the war ended, and he's like, the war didn't end, the pigs aren't going to pay any attention to us unless we blow shit up.
Which is kind of a Marxist, if you're a revolutionary Marxist, that's what you would say. And Art, I mean, Artie is a Marxist. I mean, he comes out with all the kind of Marxist phraseology. And while they're on the run, I mean, they have to keep moving on. But when they're settled, they actually are doing community activism, trying to get unionization of the places where they work, and they're not working, they're not IT specialists, cooks, receptionists. They're doing like ordinary working class jobs. So they're sort of trying to do good in their own little way. But they are Marxists. I mean, or at least they've got the talk. They've got the Marxist talk.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of play around with the idea a little bit. There's a point at which, when they've just both got new jobs, Artie turns to Annie and says, "And how are you going to contribute to this capitalist bourgeois family?" So they kind of a bit self-aware about the fact that they're Marxists living within a capitalist system and surviving within that as best they can.
I mean, the film's really quite good in bringing out the contradictions in the life that they now have, given where they start, where the Artie and Annie started off, which is, they're basically they're on the run as a family unit. I mean, it's a nuclear family unit, which with Artie as a patriarch, who basically is telling his son, I mean, the River Phoenix character, who is, Matt is 17 now, so he's beginning to want to have an independent life, or he's questioning whether, should he become independent or do what his father wants, work family first instead, all of that. I mean, it's almost like a Victorian kind of Marxist family on the run, really, in some respects. And of course, Annie is, she does all the cooking, she's a traditional wife in that unit as well, isn't she?
Yes, I mean, he does the cooking, but that's because he is a
He's a
professional
professional
cook.
cook, yes. Yeah.
But she is the kind of homemaker, seen as in charge of the kids kind of thing. There was a New York Times article that you sent me about this that I thought was very interesting. But one of the points, things that jumped out at me was, oh, it's so unrealistic with its gender politics because they don't let that, Artie's so patriarchal. I'm like, have you met the left? In particularly 60s radical left. What was it, Stokely Carmichael said a woman's place in the revolution is on her back. The gender politics of 60s radicals is not what we would expect them to be today, perhaps.
No, in Britain or the United States at that time, or
Indeed.
probably
Or
anywhere.
now, frankly.
Yes,
But
yes.
so I thought that was actually more realistic than unrealistic. They are, of course, contrasted with another family in the story, which is the family who play River Phoenix's teacher and his daughter, who is his love interest, who it becomes his first love and first sexual encounter. And they are sort of your classic trad lib family. Again, with a black, white family with a black maid, all sorts of those liberal contradictions that we talked about in our Dirty Dancing episode in some ways.
Yes. I mean, he's a teacher. I mean, the father in this is a teacher, and it's a flipping hell. That's a real. He's got. Is it a Steinway? He's got some huge, great, big.
He's
He's a
got a
huge. He's,
huge, beautiful Steinway piano.
yes.
There are
A bit
shots of the
unrealistic.
school at which he teaches.
It's
It is
very
quite
classy school, isn't it?
clearly a not a public school.
Yeah. So how they
How
afford.
they are affording them, for me was the most unrealistic part of it.
Yeah. Well.
Maybe things were different in the 80s, I don't know, but
In America, I don't really know, but the most unrealistic, if just while we're on the subject, is when Annie goes to her father, long estranged father, very rich. I mean, it's very conveniently rich, hugely rich, father who she's not seen since she's been on the run, I think. And they're in a restaurant, and that's one of the times I sort of was on the verge of blubbing, really. And all the kind of things were coming out about, his resentment of her guilt and all of that. And it was in a restaurant. And then she goes, and they didn't order food. And I just thought, what kind of a restaurant's going to let someone come in and sit down, have an argument, and then sod off? Anyway, that's a minor point. It's a very minor point. But it was a comfortable film. There were lots of, I mean, it was uncomfortable in some respects, but it was also ultimately a kind of a hallmark movie for terrorists, really, and bringing out some of the dilemmas, but softening lots of the edges as well. It wasn't, Artie and Annie, they have their differences, but they were all like smoothed over. There's no real conflict. There's no even real conflict that isn't resolved at the end. I mean, in the end, do we want to? We do spoilers, don't we? We
We
do.
do spoilers, absolutely, yeah.
Yes. I mean, the character played by River Phoenix, after, should he apply? Because this is it all kind of revolves around should he? Well, he does apply for college, doesn't he? That's what the teacher
He
in the
applies to go to
house.
Juilliard,
Yes.
and that one of the subplots is that he's an incredible musician, incredible
Yeah.
pianist. Which is why his this teacher takes a particular interest in him. And you know, he's asked constantly, who did you study under? Because you know, was it someone big and important? And it turns out that who he studied under was his mother, who was also a prodigy
And she
before
had to give
going
it
on a
up.
run.
She went on the run. Yeah. So that's a big reveal, kind of like, and that's again another one of those little sort of soft edges, because it makes something of the fact that the two boys, or at least the River Phoenix one, because he's getting older, he has to make lots of sacrifices because of his two parents and the decisions they made, some years ago, over which he had no, say, obviously. And yet the reason why he is this brilliant, I mean, utterly brilliant pianist, I mean, it's just amazing how good he is because of his mother, is because of his mother. So, I mean, wasn't really harmed. And in fact, the parents have a conversation about, oh, isn't this unfair on the kids if we keep doing it? And then one of them says, yeah, but they're great kids, aren't they? And they are great kids. They don't appear to be, in any real serious emotional way, are harmed by the fact that their parents are on the run, or at least, if they are, it's really elided. It's kind of like pushed into the background. I mean, if most ordinary 70-year-olds, he was a very well balanced 17-year-old, and that's irrespective of the fact he'd been on the run for all of his life.
He's a reasonably well-balanced 17-year-old,
Yeah.
but I think it would be hard to say they don't talk about the harm.
Oh no, they talk
In
about
the
it.
conversations where he has with the Martha Plimpton character, Lorna,
Yes.
the girlfriend, he says how hard it is, how hard his life is. When he at the very end, when they realise they have to go on the run again, because the Liberation Army guy is killed. He goes and he takes Lorna out of class and he says, I have to go. And she says, why do you have to keep paying for somebody else's mistakes?
Yeah.
And he's like, that's, they'll fall apart without me. This is my burden. So I don't think he's unaware of his burden, but he's accepting of it. Now, he may be accepting of it because he's been brought up to believe that that is the right burden to bear. But he's not unaware of it.
No.
It's and I think what's interesting, it is a family drama
Yeah.
in many ways. It's if you took out all the politics, it's a small family drama about a coming of age young man and the struggles he has with a father who he largely agrees with, but also occasionally says, you're full of shit. And that's kind of runs alongside, runs parallel to this interesting story about the politics of people. And I think in many ways, like I get what you mean about a Hallmark movie for terrorists, but the thing I find most interesting about people who make such choices is that they are human beings.
Yeah.
And they will, watch The Simpsons or go to Tesco or all those ordinary things that all of us do. And I think in humanizing them in this film, I don't think that's a choice to say, hey, aren't terrorists lovely and cuddly? I think it's in some ways, a way of saying these people made a choice. They are living with the consequences of that choice every single day of their lives for the rest of their lives. But they also are humans with lives.
Yes. I mean, but it could also have been a film about, I mean, I think the politics, really, the setup, they've been on the run for 20 years, 15 years, or nearly 20 years, or whatever, because of Vietnam and the blah blah blah. In a way, it wasn't really central to the thing. I mean, it could have been the story of a family whose father decided we're going to have a farm, in the middle of Utah, or some ridiculous place where it's completely hard and barren land, and the wife went along, and the children were born, and but their whole lives have been sacrificed to the kind of mad desire of the father to want to sort of be to farm land, which is completely ridiculous. You couldn't really make a living. I mean, there could have been another MacGuffin, really. They didn't have to be lovable terrorists, or really have to be very political, because it is a family. I mean, underneath, it's actually what you were saying. It's a family drama where it's sort of set up in a relatively traditional setup, and with a boy wishing to add struggling. Should I stay with the family? Do I identify with myself? Do I go out into the world? What do I do? So in a way, I'm sort of mocking it, saying it's sort of hallmark terrorism, but it doesn't have to be about the politics, because the central element is a family drama, isn't it? Which is where I think when I started to blub, those two moments were the blub moments, right? Those, it was about that, not about the politics.
Yes, absolutely. But I think, not to get all radical feminist on you, well, I don't know why not. I am a radical feminist, but the personal is political.
Yeah.
So again, I come back to the fact that politics is about people, and the human side of people making a living with political choices. It's a political decision to show that human side.
Yeah, and remarkable that in 1988, I mean, the film was long in gestation, apparently, so it wasn't, I think it maybe started in the early 1980s that Lumet wanted to make this film, or this kind of film, that it actually, it's a film which is quite sympathetic to people on the very radical left who committed a certain act. And this is like Reagan's America. This is kind of like shows up the slight contradictions of America at this time, that a film like that, and I can't think of another film that has made that presents that kind of in that kind of a way.
Well, yes and no. Point. I mean, I've literally just pulled up a list in front of me, because I think actually this sits in a tradition of films that there was a slew of films in the 1980s about Vietnam.
About Vietnam, yes.
And all of them came from that kind of perspective, that Vietnam was wrong, that the vets were left behind. So, for example, Platoon came out 2 years before, Full Metal Jacket 1 year before.
But not the people...
Good Morning Vietnam 1 year before.
Yeah. Oh, the Vietnam films about Vietnam and how terrible it was, et cetera, et cetera. But,
they were films about how terrible it was, rather than the kind of standard war movie. And that, war was terrible and America was terrible in this war is a left-wing position in Reagan's America.
Yeah, but to actually...
So it wasn't that out of place in its politics. Maybe the fact that it was domestic terrorism rather than the war, yes.
That's what I meant. I mean, there'd been plenty of films saying, Vietnam was very bad, blah, blah, blah. But to actually have a film about the people who in their own minds were like Just Stop Oil, who did something, who blew up, who in the story blew up a laboratory, who blinded a completely innocent person, and then to present them as decent human beings, that I think is, I don't know of any other film, and I'm very ignorant, so there are probably loads of them, but I can't think of a film, an American film, that presented people like that in that way. And definitely at that time, at the fag end, when George Bush Senior was president by then, and Reagan was just handing over, wasn't he?
I think it 88 would
88,
be
89, yeah.
Yeah,
he'd just beaten Mike Dukakis with
didn't he win 48 states or something?
With the most horrible campaign,
Yeah.
Anyway, but the context is that, and then a film like this pops up. So it is kind of remarkable in its own way.
Absolutely. I mean, it is a very singular film, definitely. Yes. I don't think I've ever seen anything else quite like it.
No, I'm glad that you made me watch it. I mean, it's no Dirty Dancing, but I'm glad you made me watch it, because it does raise all sorts of things. Even though
I feel, Stephen, we've been doing this for, God, it must be coming up 7 years, 8 years,
I really don't
just
know.
Forever.
I don't think about it, really.
And if I have achieved nothing else with this podcast, turning you into a fan of Dirty Dancing, I will take that to the bank.
Okay, right.
It's not the same. I mean, it's not the same for two reasons. First of all, Dirty Dancing was a very clever film, because it hid a very political film inside a chick flick.
Yes.
Whereas this does what it...
It's the other way around, isn't it, really? Yes.
It almost hides a chick flick inside a very clever war film. Completely. And as I say, my motivation at 13 for getting into this film and going to see it in the cinema in the first place was not pure.
No.
Well, it was probably quite pure. I was only 13. I just wanted to look at the pretty boy.
Poor old River Phoenix.
Poor River Phoenix. But there are other River Phoenix films I have not returned to over and over again, but this one I've
Right.
seen dozens of times.
Yeah.
I can quote whole chunks of the dialogue. My sister and I have a pact that whoever goes first will make sure that Fire and Rain is played at our funeral as a direct result of this film.
That is that is that the James Taylor song that's
That's the
played
James
during the
Taylor song.
birthday party, that lovely birthday party. I think that might have been the time where I was on the verge of blubbing, really. And I
And
don't
then
even
they
like to say
play
that.
not just the song, but they played the family listening to the song over the car driving away from River Phoenix at the very end of the film. And that has me going every single time when I was absolutely in tears at that point.
No, I mean it's a film that I would definitely recommend our listener watch. With maybe some critical faculties, but to enjoy it. But it's definitely a film definitely worth watching because it's very singular in so many ways. And it's a
It
Sidney Lumet film, and they're always worth watching, even the poor ones.
Yes, I mean, it's beautifully and very quietly directed. The direction isn't intrusive on the story. There isn't a kind of sense that you're watching for the direction, if you know what I mean, which you get with some other directors.
Yeah, no, he's a very quiet director. I mean, very, very good films he made, but he's very doesn't intrude too much generally.
But also, I think the characterization, I mean, it won and was nominated for lots and lots of awards. I mean, practically every single one of them was nominated for something. River Phoenix was nominated as Best Supporting Actor for an Oscar. Christine Lacy we and River Phoenix and Sidney Lumet were all nominated for Golden Globes, and the screenplay actually won a Golden Globe. The performances from the main characters, but also a lot of the supporting characters as well, are really good. And the dialogue is
It's
good
very
because
funny at times.
it's very funny at times and very real. Arty describes himself as a red diaper baby, but also clearly Jewish and has that lovely kind of New York Jewish traditional sense of humor. It describes goes into his New York Russian Jewish accent at some point and calls his wife a wasp,
Well, she is. I mean, she's
which
extremely
she is.
well-heeled wasp.
And there's just a lot of subtlety in that kind of cultural interplay as much as there is in the political interplay.
I mean, it is like I said, it's a sort of singular film. And Artie, I mean, there's some reference because he's your classic New York Jewish communist, coming from a background where his parents are clearly communists. New York Jewish communists as well, hence the term Bernard Pink diaper baby or whatever that was that you just said.
Red diaper baby.
Red diaper baby. So it's kind of references a kind of a political culture that in America, even the most liberal of American films, Hollywood films, doesn't really go into too much, very much at all. So it's there's a lot there is a lot going on really. So yes, I can praise it highly enough. It is a very good film. I've got one or two little reservations, but it's a love. It's a lo if you don't have a problem with people accidentally blinding people during an act of conscience,
To be
then
fair,
you're
I think they have a
absolutely
problem with it. They are quite clear
missed.
that they are
They didn't
the
like
Christine
it.
Lacy in particular is desperately guilty
They're
about it.
defensive. They're very defensive about it. Yes, but they didn't. But they ran away from justice. Which is kind of like, well, if you're that good, you feel that bad about it, why didn't you stand up and take it? Which a lot of weather people did. They all ran away. Then they became fugitives. So
I
they
mean,
actually
this is.
are reflective of a real phenomenon in American life at this point.
That is an interesting question. Which they do address in the film. When she goes for that lunch with her father,
Oh,
he
she's going.
says, "Why don't you turn yourself in?" And she says, "I will when the kids are
She's
old
going.
enough not to need me
Oh, yeah, that's
anymore."
true. That is true.
But she says, "I can't speak for Artie. I don't know what he'll do." So I think that's
Thoughts.
again, it is explored. But I agree. One of the things that I've been trying to say about bravery of radicalism is that bravery is only bravery if you accept the consequences. Now, I think in their own way, this family have accepted and lived with the consequences of their bravery. They're not trying to evade justice and live their normal lives. They are saying there are two sets of consequences, one of which is we live like this in this very difficult way, or we go to jail.
Well, they do try to live normal lives, but the FBI keep popping up, and so they
Well,
have to
yes.
run. But so and all that guy, drops a minute because of the credit card and all of that. So they are trying to live an ordinary life,
But they know that
they
that
can't.
ordinary life is going to be like months at a time, place by place by place.
It's always got that hanging over them, that
So,
bravery.
but I a lot of the stuff around Just Stop Oil and the campus protests and things like that. The narrative has been they're so brave, therefore there shouldn't be consequences. And I'm like, but bravery only exists if there are consequences. Otherwise,
Yeah,
it's not
you're not going to
brave.
be brave.
And I think that is one of the grey areas that the film kind of does skirt around a little bit, perhaps. But then again, I'm not sure we're supposed to make that kind of black and white moral judgment on Artie and Annie. Are they brave? Were they stupid? Were they both?
Yeah, because they were young
They were
students
incredibly young,
when they did what they
because
did.
this is. They clearly did this pre-college, because the conversation she has with her, even though Danny is a child, so they've had a child, they've got married and had a child. The conversation she has with her father is they want Danny at Juilliard, and the father says, just as they wanted you. So she has gone on the run before going to college.
Well, she's clearly a bit younger than Artie, which would be traditional at that time, wouldn't it, for a
Yes.
man? But I mean, this—I don't know if this is a parting shot or question or whatever. But we are talking in the shadow of some very unpleasant far right, characterize it as you would, Islamophobic, whatever.
I think both of those are appropriate
Yes, yeah. I mean,
characterizations.
I'm more than happy to throw it at that. And I'm not saying that those people doing what they were doing in Southport and various other places are politically committed in the same way as Artie and Annie. But some people might question, are we being really nice and soft and lovely about these people? Because, well, all right, so they may have blinded some guy, but they did it as a matter of conscience. They're on the right side of history, so far as people like us are concerned. But could you imagine a film, which would be kind of brave, maybe, or stupid, I don't know, a film about some kind of right-wing activist who did something stupid in the distant past and was on the run? And would we, could they ever? I mean, there'd be a lot of people in America would be looking upon these people with those kind of spectacles on the right and go, who are these guys? They're just terrorists. Can we imagine watching a film about those
So I've
people, but
never
on a different
seen
political
it,
frame?
but is it worth, given that question? I've never seen it, so I don't know what
No.
stance it takes. But is
All
it
right.
worth, given that question, us doing American History X at some point?
Which is a film I've never seen.
I've
So,
never seen it either, so we can
okie
both come to it afresh.
doke, right? There you have it, listener. This is a very careful way that we decide what we're going to talk about, which explains the completely systematic and coherent journey that we've been taking over these past too many
Millions of
years.
years.
Yes.
Absolutely. And how I managed to sneak in Dirty Dancing. Great. Lovely. Well, thank you ever so much, Stephen. And thank you for watching. And I know I've been pushing this for a little while now.
I was good. No. I mean, I liked it. I liked the film. I did like the film. It was a nice Sunday afternoon with some crisps and some tears. Some tears and some crisps.
Pears and crisps. Lots of salt. There you go. That's what
Yes.
you want. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Stephen. Thank you as well to Lord Stuart Wood of Anfield for our theme tune. And this has been a Political Human production.
Hurrah.